It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Might baby be flopping!
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Yes, just revamping the show just for 1 week. That's what you're hearing underneath is Fishbone's version of Freddy's Dead. And Fishbone, of course, won the honorable mention in the music documentary competition for their film Everyday Sunshine, The Story of Fishbone, which I was a juror of at the Nashville Film Festival last week. So the man pushing play and apparently the biggest Mike Bibby fan in this room, that's Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
He's a member of the
what?
Heat. He's just...
Yeah, he's a...
He wants a ring really
he's
bad.
He's a ring hunter.
Yeah.
Yep.
So... Well, sitting in with us, Joe Shearer of the Film Yap.
Hello.
And actor Rob Johansson, who you can see tonight and running for the rest of the, most of the month at IRT in 39 Steps. How are you, Rob?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here. It's been a long time coming.
I know. It is. It's been because I've had Academy Award-winning actors faster on the show faster than you. So, but you're a busy man. You're teaching and directing and acting and
right.
And all
doing
sorts.
There Indianapolis, place to be.
Carving a living in the arts in this city. Got to be done.
Yes.
Hello, Mayor Ballard. All right. We're going to move on to a little bit of what's new in theaters, and we'll talk with Rob and, about his play and Hitchcock and other things. Just feel free to chime in no matter what. And I guess we're going to start with, well, I'm going to start with the film I saw because, well, it's my bloody show, and we'll just work on that. It's called Certified Copy. And it stars the visually stunning Juliette Binoche, mm-hmm. and also William Schamel, one of the English that guys, which will IMDb his.
We are pro that guy.
We are pro that guy, mm-hmm. But we'll IMDb his info in a little bit. And Kobe, she's fairly young, but I might make you Google her image anyway because I don't think you know who Juliette Binoche is.
You are right.
Okay. Ooh. Well, for those who are new to the show, occasionally, I will bring up an actress that Kobe is not familiar with, and I will say, you must Google her image immediately. And they're usually from a different era.
That's right.
Not old chicks, as you accidentally referred to them one time.
No, I meant to refer to them as that one time.
You're a bad person. You're a bad person. And if Anne Margaret and Claudia Cardinale were here, they'd say you're a bad person, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Let's move on. All right. So anyway, it's... hit the audio. Let's start with that, and
right.
Then I'll explain.
Hang
it.
On. Okay,
all right.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm so sorry I'm late. I would blame the traffic, but I walked here. Some of you may know that art is not an easy subject to write about. It's my intention to try and show that the copy itself has worth in that it leads us to the original, and I believe this approach is not only valid in art.
Ah, buongiorno.
I'd really like just to get out of the town for just a little while.
I have an idea. I can take you to a place you find it interesting.
I can't believe you're sitting in my car. I mean it.
Would you like to invite me for a cup of coffee?
She mistook you for my husband, and I didn't correct her.
Obviously, we make a good couple.
There's a golden tree inside. The bride and groom come to promise to be faithful forever.
If they're happy and enjoying life, then we should congratulate them.
Stop teasing me.
The only thing that'll keep that marriage alive is care and awareness.
Awareness of what?
Things change. Everything changes. Blossom turns to fruit.
And then? My family lives their own lives and I live mine. What kind of philosophy is that?
It's just not reasonable to expect us to feel the same way that that married couple do.
Que la seule chose qu'elle demande, c'est que vous marchiez à côté d'elle et que vous posiez votre main sur son épaule.
The whole purpose of life is to have fun.
The gist of the film is, and this is basically a two-person show. Chimelle is a writer, and Binoche is a fan, a reporter. And as early on, it looks like they're getting to know one another, and then they wind up taking a car trip together. And then there's some role-playing, not that kind of role-playing, gentlemen, but they start to act like a couple, a happy couple. Than not a happy couple. And as time goes on in this film, you know, all hour 45 minutes of it is, who are they really? Are they really playing an elaborate role-playing game? Or are they a couple that are just doing something, anything to save their relationship? And the beauty part about this is, and I think, Joe, I think your colleague Chris wrote on this as well, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. And I think that's what makes this a really engaging film is that you're not quite sure. I bet if a group of us, not this group, I'm not going to a movie with you guys. Not this movie, no offense. I'll watch North by Northwest with you, but not this film. But I bet you would come up with different answers. And it's two really solid performances. Actually, Kobe, would you do an IMDb of William Chimelle for me, please?
Indeed.
And then Juliette Binoche, of course, won an Oscar for... The English Patient, mm-hmm. and has been just a very solid actress with films like Damage and Chocolat and Camilla Sense of Snow. And, just two really... It's not Blue Valentine where you want to, you know, put a pistol to your head by the end of it, but it could tread down that area a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think also maybe where you are in your own personal relationship status may have something to do with how this film goes as well. Do we have an IMDb up there, Mr. Slagle?
I forgot the guy's last name, but then I just saw the thing.
Shimell.
Transformers 3 and X-Men First Class.
Those haven't come out yet.
Yeah,
don't give us stuff that we haven't seen yet. What else has he been in?
What's his name?
William Chimelle.
Okay. Jeez,
I'm on it.
You're faster when you're Googling old chicks.
Us going to the movies, I don't know, we wouldn't get past the concession stand.
No.
I think we'd get in a big fight.
Really?
I think there'd be a large argument.
Mm-hmm. Over concessions?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
Well, not really, because unless it has butter, real butter, I'm not eating it.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. So that includes the soft drink.
Yeah, exactly, the soft drink. Yes. I want butter on the soft drink.
Especially
drinks.
The soft
drink. Soft drink, sign that. Yeah. Or the, you know, the True Grit flask.
Yes. Yes.
The best movie swag we received last Christmas.
Yes. William Chimelle.
Yes. Kobe.
86, L'Enfance du Christ.
Go on.
Hercules, 2005 TV movie. The Rake's Progress, 2008. Certified copy. And then filming, Amore.
Amore.
A-M-O-U-R.
I stand corrected.
Yep.
Jerk. Anyway, it's a two-person, very, very intense but very entertaining two-person show. Go check it out. Kobe, you got the...
I
know, it's your multitask.
Yes, 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 yes! All right.
Okay, well, I got to see the art film, and not really, we didn't plan this, but Joe, you saw Fast Five.
It's also an art film.
Well, technically, as we say on Art of the Matter, any form of self-expression qualifies as art.
Yeah, I don't think this qualifies as self-expression, though.
Yeah, really? I was wondering where you were going with that.
Why don't you hit the audio, smart guy?
Professional runners. We find them, we take them as a team, and we bring them back. And above all else, we don't ever, ever let them get into cars.
Home sweet home.
Went from Mission Impossible to Mission of Freaking Sanity.
We stick to the plan. If you're gonna survive, stop thinking like a cop. You're in my world now. We'll do one last job, and then we disappear forever.
So, Joe?
There was a little bit of dialogue. A
little
this.
Bit. Yeah, yeah. Not, it's not Transformers. We have to give it that.
Actually, that was every line of dialogue in the movie.
So. Oh. So, besides 13-year-old boys, Paul Walker and Vin Diesel, who and Justin Lin, who asked for this?
I think that's all it takes.
Really?
That's
enough?
Those few guys, yeah.
I guess. Well, yeah. Joe, your thoughts on Five?
It was actually fun. I had a good time with
really?
It.
Really?
It was, now, you know, as fun as any movie can be where two guys fall off of a cliff in a car or drive off of a cliff in a car, plummeting 300 feet into a river, they jump out and land in the water like they jumped off the diving board at this local swimming pool.
Did they flap their wings before they 6 inches before the ground they hit that?
Yeah, they kind of turned. That kind of broke the fall.
Oh, I see. They didn't scream while going down the car, right?
They didn't really have time. They're too busy. Fine. They're too busy posing and jumping off.
So now I have to ask, because I'm looking out for Rob here. Does he have to watch the first four in order to get the subtle nuances of Five?
Let me make my admission that this was the first Fast and the Furious movie I have seen.
You're kidding.
None of the others.
Really?
And
man.
I had from what I gathered.
I've even
gathered
seen the first one.
Yeah,
Wow, that's saying something.
Yeah, it is.
He was watching
it.
It was not even
this year in the Kobe Brings Back Hollywood tour.
I know. We'll get to that.
But
so.
My knowledge is strictly based off of the trailers and all that. I kind of know.
You know, he lives his life a quarter mile at a time.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
Who doesn't nowadays?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to. That's all you can do. But you know, I figured out that you know Tyrese and Sung Kang and those kind of people were from previous movies.
I love those growlers.
Yeah. And there was equal parts growling and laughing in this one. It was kind of had an Ocean's 11 vibe. It's mostly heist.
Somebody
movies.
Else has mentioned that. So it's more heist than car chase than racing.
Yeah, yeah. I actually wanted to call it the Brazilian Job, but there were two reasons why.
Three of us are married. I don't think we're allowed to say that.
Yeah. So
seriously.
The one reason is the obvious one. The second one was that's actually what they were going to call the sequel to the Italian Job. Mark Wahlberg's version.
No,
had they done one?
Well, that's okay.
Yeah,
that's really all right.
Yeah, but you know, it starts off with, you know, it starts off as ridiculous as it can be, and it just gets more and more ridiculous, which doesn't seem.
So, would you lump this in the kick-ass red the Expendables Machete League of Ridiculousness.
Oh yeah, they're all straight faced except for Dwayne Johnson, if you excuse me, who cheeses it up. He seems like the only one who knows that this movie sucks, and he plays it as such.
Well, all right, let's be fair. Can you think of the last Vin Diesel film you've seen? I have.
Uh-huh.
Can you think of the last Paul Walker film you've seen? I haven't.
No. Yeah.
I think he was in Flags of Our Fathers for about 10 minutes. So, you know, I remember seeing Faster.
Uh-huh.
I remember. So I've seen some of Mr. Johnson's films, as have you.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think he's got a little more leverage.
He's got a good idea of what's good and what's not. You know, at least with what's not, I guess.
Right.
But he has a lot of fun in the role. He gives the best response to the old "I've got good news and bad news" line.
Really
great response to that.
But
we can't
repeat that.
Well, you could, but I don't want to spoil it.
That's fine.
A fun little response. But
that's fine.
It's lots of cars going fast, lots of ridiculously impossible things happening. Of course, the ending is based upon 8,000 things happening in a certain sequence. None of which of those are more probable than, say, being struck by lightning. And
Twice
in the same spot.
Right.
And, of course, you know, that line tends to kind of happen. That, you know, that line of impossibility tends to go right into effect for the sake of getting the movie going.
And making number six.
Yeah, and making number six.
That's not a spoiler, by the way. If you don't know that, then it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. They've already, actually, I believe Mr. Johnson himself has already said, "Oh, I'm coming back for six." So,
I see. You know. He actually said that in the movie. He looked at the screen.
He did. He goes, "Coming soon, Fast Six, starring me."
And this thing is 2 hours and 10 minutes. Did it feel it?
Oh, man. It actually didn't really.
It's so fast.
Yeah,
and furious.
It is.
Yes, it's so fast and so furious that you don't
and
even know.
And five.
Yeah.
So five.
But there's a couple scenes they should have cut out, probably. There's a really pointless drag racing sequence.
but then you won't live your life a quarter mile at a time.
No.
There you go.
Nobody.
But this is a mile and a half. I think they said a mile and a half.
Oh, what?
You know what? Sequels? Sequels, you always make them bigger.
Yeah.
Always
yeah.
longer.
Yep.
So
hey.
Okay, so are you saying
this is what I'm gathering, Matt.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not hella bad.
I think he liked it a little more than that.
So,
try another one.
We'll go okay.
Now that was a good movie.
But
I feel like it's between
but
those.
Bring well, I don't have a response for that
I know,
yet.
We
we'll
to
work
get...
on that. But bring your True Grit flask if you have one.
Yeah,
to see
yeah.
it.
And this is not a turn your brain off film. This film turns your brain off for you.
Oh, very good. See, that's a quote that won't make the poster. That's
go.
A good one.
I mean that in a good way.
Okay,
that's a good review
that's
there.
Fine. That is a good one.
We might take that.
I think so.
Thank
we got
you,
the,
Joe.
We got that nugget, right?
Yeah,
so
we got
okay,
that.
Good. All right, we're gonna catch up on a couple of titles. There was one that I got to see last week, which only lasted a week, and that's a shame. But I was told on Facebook, and thank you, Jim Burrows, for letting me know about this. Apparently, it's available on Netflix demand. But the dark comedy Super with Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page. Rainn Wilson is a fry cook. Now, stay with us. This is not a TV sitcom. He's a fry cook who's married to Liv Tyler.
Okay.
All right, stay with it. Yeah, who's an addict. And she dumps her husband for the drug-dealing pimp Kevin Bacon. By the way, Michael Rooker's in his entourage. Always a good sign.
Yeah.
And Wilson, in a feat of desperation, depression, and having an epiphany in the form of something that's really not based on Bible Man, seriously, he decides to create his own superhero, the Crimson Bolt. And with his trusty wrench, will take law into his own hands, whether it's drug dealers, pimps, or people who cut in line at the movie theater.
Those are the people who should be punished.
They should be bludgeoned, and they are in this one.
Says the one that goes to the screening.
With the reserve seats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pass the line.
Ellen Page also shows up in this film, who wants to be the comic sidekick, the Robin to his Batman. And it's not an over-the-top ridiculous film like Kick-Ass. It is more of a disturbing, lonely old man version of, say, Taxi Driver, or even, for me, the underrated Observe and Report,
yeah.
the good mall cop comedy with Seth Rogen. Wilson starred in a couple of other films in the past, and obviously he's the guy from The Office, and he's really good in this. It's just a schlub who who wants to fight crime, and it's an even schlubbier version of Seth Rogen's Green Hornet, which of course comes out on DVD next week. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a dark film, so it's not Kick-Ass, it's not The Incredibles, but it's really worth checking out as well. So go look for it while it's on demand, or wait for it to on DVD. But y'all didn't let it have another week, and that's your fault.
Y'all didn't.
All right. Where were you?
I don't know.
And before we take a break, I guess we should bring this up. Atlas shrugged, and so did moviegoers. So there was an article in the Los Angeles Times, and I apologize for not getting the producer's name pronounced correctly. John Aglialoro, who's the producer of the film, announced after the below-par money that came from last week, that parts 2 and 3, this is supposed to be a trilogy of the Anne Rhine novel, which has now become the film of the Tea Party. Basically, the producer threw his hands up and said, quote, "Critics, you've won. I'm having deep second thoughts on why I should do part 2. Well, that's a shame. By the way, how come Michael Bay can't say this? Mm-hmm. But he won't. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this before. There have been times when films that are geared toward a conservative market that are made, like an American Carol and other films like that, and they never do well. And I don't know if maybe if you stop spending money on the wool Patriot outfits and maybe get some buses and get people to go see Atlas Shrugged, it would be a bigger progress. And by the way, you know, if you watched on The Daily Show and the Colbert Report, you know, they had the montage of everybody talking about how important this novel is and how important it is to go see this movie. Well, apparently not enough people did. And maybe you should study the people that, I don't know, brought the churches, the buses, put people in when they went to go see The Passion of the Christ, which, by the way, opened on Cash Wednesday. So if people really want part 2 and part 3, because this guy, he's going to have to sell more gym equipment in order for that to happen, and it's probably not going to happen. But if you're Sean and you're Glenn and you think this film is really important, why don't you put some of your own money and finance 2 and 3?
Mm-hmm. Nobody else is going to.
There's my soapbox for the day. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll talk about an old title that is out on DVD, and it's a must-have on DVD and Blu-ray. And then we'll talk with Rob, we'll talk with Kobe, we'll talk with Joe, and other silliness. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just
just go. Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Video stores open if there are any. You're, and welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Kobe, where can they read our blogs at?
Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
There you go. Kobe Slagle right there. Joe Shearer of the Film Yap is here. Yo. And Rob Johansson from the 39 Steps at the IRT, hanging out, having fun. A couple other notes of films that opened. Kill the Irishman, the 70s gangster film with Ray Stevenson, Christopher Walken, and Val Kilmer. So hopefully we'll check that out. Hoodwink 2, Hood vs. Evil. Joe tried recommending that to the kids' film correspondent. Thanks for nothing. Dylan Dog, Dead of Night, which wasn't screened for the press. Mm-hmm. And Prom. This is a studio with four men in their 20s or their 40s. We have no business seeing this movie whatsoever.
Wow.
Fortunately, my daughter doesn't want it. Well, I don't think she wants to see it. I'm not going to ask her.
No.
And this just in from The Onion, and Rob, I thought of you for this. Mm-hmm. Production of Iceman Cometh canceled due to entire cast getting callback for Axe body spray commercial. We love The Onion. Uh-huh. So we checked out the DVD, and I had to double-check with Joe. I go through the DVD and Blu-ray list this week, and there's nothing new, really, except for... And I look, and the Wayback's not on here.
No, it's not. It must be next week.
So probably next week. But a couple of other older titles to bring up. If you want these on Blu-ray, you might want to. Bob Dylan's documentary, Don't Look Back, which I think is one of the best music documentaries. Of course, that's Dylan in 1965, touring London. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Terry Gilliam taking care of Hunter Thompson with Benicio del Toro and Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. The Scent of Green Papaya, for you Asian cinema fans. And I know it's not a film, but I bring it up anyway. The complete 14th season of South Park.
No, right.
Close enough.
Close enough. El Topo on Anchor Blu-ray. Yeah. But the film I really want to talk about, and I'm glad it finally, not only did it get an updated treatment on DVD, it got the Criterion treatment on DVD and Blu-ray. And it's the 1981 thriller Blowout from Brian De Palma with John Travolta, Nancy Allen, and a very creepy John Lithgow. Here's the audio.
It began with a sound that no one was ever supposed to hear.
Yes, he says he pulled a girl out of the car.
And I would like you to forget about her.
Yeah, that's what I heard just before the tire blew out. You're right, it was a shot.
He recorded a murder. They say it never happened.
There's still loose ends, witnesses. The girl, I've decided to terminate her. Terminate her. Terminate her.
Brian De Palma's Blowout. Now you hear it. Now you don't.
Kobe, can you count?
Yes,
you,
I can count.
Are you sure?
Yes. We're here. We're here, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
We landed. Yep. Well done, sir. I remember seeing this in the theater back in 1981. That explains a lot about my upbringing. But it's also, for me, probably... I don't compile lists because I have things to do. I have work and family and jobs, but this might be the best example in which a remake is better than the original. Mm-hmm. And this is of course De Palma's version of the 1966 Antonioni drama Blow Up, where David Hemmings photographs. He may or may not have photographed a murder, And, of course, he hypes it up. De Palma hypes it up a little bit with John Travolta as a sound man. And then there's a plot twist that involves photography and making of the film. You know, De Palma's really got a love-hate track record if you look at his films. I mean, the guy's done some incredible work like The Untouchables and Carrie. He also did Mission to Mars and The Black Dahlia. Take that. So,
Snake Eyes.
Snake Eyes really bad. Ooh, boy. Yeah. And not just because Nick Cage needed to pay off his debt, mm-hmm. but that's unfortunate.
There's no excuse for that.
But this might... we got that one, right? We got that as well? We're just collecting sound bites here at Film Sociology.
Yes, we are.
It's Michael Caine syndrome. Mm-hmm. It's the, hey, I'll do it, the check cleared.
Well, yeah, and you know, if Caine was in the De Palma film before this, he was in Dressed to Kill. Mm-hmm. And, it was also The Hand, which I watched recently, that was directed by Oliver Stone. And, yeah, mm-hmm. I think one of Caine's things was, yeah, I don't remember seeing the movie. I have seen the view from the house that the movie bought.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Hey, Jaws 4.
Yep.
Ooh.
Jaws.
The man couldn't pick up his Oscar for Hannah and Her Sisters because he was on the set of Jaws 4. Mm-hmm. And I also know why I know this. It's because I'm the host. But he was supposed to be in Switching Channels, which was a 80s cable TV version of The Front Page and His Girl Friday. But because he was stuck doing Jaws 4, it went to Burt Reynolds instead with Kathleen Turner.
He couldn't resist the lure of working with Mario Van Peebles.
Well, who does, really, besides Melvin? Back to this one. Back to this is, for many people, saying this might be De Palma's best film. Mm-hmm. And I might have to agree with him on that. Rob, you just wrinkled your forehead.
No. I'm just wrinkling. I'm preparing for tonight's performance.
Oh, sorry.
I start with the forehead and work my way down.
But this was, you know, really suspenseful, not scary. But suspenseful, you know, like the guy Hitchcock, who we'll get to in a moment.
Is that your way of trying to ease me into this?
I think so, actually.
And
what are you worried? What are you worried? It's not, and it's not freaky.
What are you worried about?
What are you worried about? And also, this was also, I think, a slight turning point for the acting career of John Travolta, because prior to this, it was Grease, and this was before. I want to say it was before Urban Cowboy. And then before the drop-off that was the 1980s for Mr. Travolta. But he's very good in this. And Nancy Allen, and I know she was interviewed in The Onion last week about this film and her other roles. So anyway, I'm glad it got the treatment. I'm one of those nerds that if you're going to pay for it, let's hear the commentaries, let's see the documentaries, let's see all of, you know, get my money's worth on this mm-hmm. one. And Blowout definitely has that. So go buy it, go rent it. All right, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk with Rob Johansson about the films of Alfred Hitchcock. We'll get to What is Kobe Watching, a Sidney Lumet edition,
all right.
And some title droppings. Boy, that sounded bad.
Whoa.
That sounded really bad. You can name drop, but you shouldn't title drop from the Nashville Film Festival. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Kobe, don't we have the guest intro? I want to share it with Rob. He hasn't been here yet. Don't know it, Joe. You just because you know what happens. Jeez.
Is it guest droppings?
It's not guest droppings. No, it's not.
We'll be sure to leave some before we
thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
I'll leave some.
Well, now I know where that extra pledge money is going to go to, taking care of the studio. Yikes.
Do you got it there?
Yes. Okay. Hang on. Here we go. Here we go. Yep. God, I am off today.
Oh, Roger! We're not alone.
We got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
Welcome, guys. Nice. Always make the guests feel hospitable.
Yep.
That's horse brutality right there.
Yeah.
Got one, before we talk with Rob, I got one, is recent. A film obit, Alice Ward died this past week. And if you don't know the name, that is the mother, the actual mother from the film The Fighter, played, and of course Melissa Leo played the mother who, and she won a well-deserved Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her role as the mother of Dickie and Mickey Ward and the women, the daughters with the big hair, and none of them like Amy Adams.
Wait, so Melissa Leo died?
No, Alice Ward died, the character, the actual lady.
So okay.
Oh,
so who
was
she played
lady.
By?
Again?
Melissa Leo. You shut up over there. I'm trying to pay respect.
What's she done?
I pay respect, Joe. and you do that.
I'm very relieved to hear Melissa Leo is still with us.
She's still
wonderful.
With us. Yes. So here's that's just a great excuse to play some edited clips from The Fighter.
Mick, what's the problem?
The problems.
What problems?
What problem?
Problems.
Like what?
Like maybe you not showing up on time to train. Like maybe him having to come find you in a crack house when you're supposed to be at the airport.
I'm sorry. I don't know who you are. Why are you talking?
I'm Charlene. We just met. We're together. Do we need to do this again? Hi, I'm Charlene.
Hi, I'm Charlene.
Hi, Charlene.
We're together.
What are you going to do, Mick? Listen, some MTV girl works in a bar. She know about boxing.
I know. They're going to Vegas and getting paid to train year-round. Sounds a hell of a lot better than what you got him doing here.
You gonna let her talk like that to your mother?
Come on, Mickey.
I told you, we're together. This is my girlfriend. I want her here.
I have done everything. Everything I could for you, Mickey. This MTV girl comes along.
Stop calling me an MTV girl, whatever that means.
She's wild. Well, 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 look at this.
Look at what?
Why are you hiding from us, Mickey?
He's not hiding.
I wasn't talking to you, I was talking to my son. What are you doing, Mixer, huh?
I'm right here. I ain't hiding from nobody else.
Well, you're not helping yourself with your father's scumbag friend, Lenato. What are you gonna do? Turn your back on Dickie next, huh? All we ever wanted for you was to be world champion.
Mickey's a grown man. He can think for himself.
Shut your mouth.
Skank. Don't call me skank. I'll rip that nest.
Hurry
up. What are you doing?
Mother!
What the hell's the matter with you? You...
Oh,
come on! Hands hurt!
Did it hurt? I hope it hurt.
Sal Lenato is a good man.
A good man?
He's a legitimate businessman.
Legitimate businessman?
What?
Oh, my God. You know what that sounds like? He's a crook, George.
He owns a taxi cab company. He's organized that.
Oh, my God. He's a cab driver. He knows everything about boxing, right?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think he's going to steal your son's money and rob him blind.
Why would you think that? Why would you even think that? Why can't you trust anybody with...
I know people. I know, George. You think I don't know anything, but I know people.
I know you know
and
people.
And that's Sal Lenato Banana. We don't need that in our lives.
We haven't made $1 with these kids.
You betrayed
nothing
me.
For them. I didn't...
You betrayed me. He's a crook.
What's Mickey supposed to do? Dickie's in jail.
We're not talking about his trainer, sweetheart. We're talking about his manager. That's me.
Yeah, but Mom, maybe Mickey should try something different.
What are you doing opening your mouth in my kitchen? You owe me $200.
I said I was going to pay you next week.
I don't want another word out of you. That was last month you told me 2 weeks. Did you take sides against me in my own house? You owe me money?
Alice, thank you for giving us the character that Melissa got to play.
Wow. Yes.
I haven't seen the actual DVD release of this, because I would love to see more footage of this family.
Oh yeah.
So Rob, you had a note learned about this.
As an actor, I still haven't seen this movie, but I've seen.
We'll add it to your list. Yeah,
it's my list. Tons of clips. Yeah, I'll see that before the Triple F movie that you reviewed.
Yeah, before.
My
yeah.
brain is still oatmeal from that. I don't know.
Absolutely.
But Mark Wahlberg filmed all the scenes where he had to be in boxing shape. You know, they did that
first. Of course.
And then they filmed the scenes where he's a little past or a lot past his prime. So he was relieved of this unbelievably strict diet and training regimen that he had to do. They're filming these scenes where he's put on weight, and they're looking at the scenes that they've shot, and the director decides, you know what? There are a couple of things that we need to reshoot. And he had gained a substantial amount of weight back, and they said, and bless him, he was like, all right.
Well, Wahlberg, one, being the producer, two, has worked with David O. Russell before, and I know he's got you either love to work with him or you want to punch him in the throat,
apparently.
Ask Lily Tomlin.
Uh-huh. And Clooney.
Yeah, and Clooney. if he's, the fact that he was willing to do that, he's still a young man. I mean, you remember those famous stories of De Niro after The Untouchables going, I'm not doing this anymore. It's too much.
But he did Cape Fear.
He bulked up for that one as opposed to, putting it on and then taking it off. So, you can still do that.
De Niro is the first one that I remember being a presto changeo kind of guy like that.
Raging Bull.
Amazing.
Unbelievable with that.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, how are you, sir?
I'm great. It's been fun to hear about all the films that I don't need to go to.
That's why we're here. But you...
Education.
Matt sees movies, so you don't have to.
That's right. Thank you, Kobe. Now, but you, except for Kobe, need to run to IRT and check out the 39 Steps.
Yes, you do.
Which is running through, what's it running? It's May...
May 15th. Actually, for those people listening, it's selling out. We already have most of the shows are sold out, but they just added... a show on Sunday, May 15th that probably has a bare house right now. So you could probably get online, irtlive.com, and score some tickets, some really good seats.
There you go. Very good. Now, as much as you can or want to share with us, tell us about for those who don't know, tell us the story of the 39 Steps.
The 39 Steps is a Hitchcock movie that is kind of off the radar screen. It was great. I talked to Joe before we went on air for this show, and you know the mainstream ones. You know, what have you seen, Joe?
Yeah, I've seen Psycho. I've seen North by Northwest.
It's not like the 20th Hitchcock film you name.
Yeah.
No.
You're getting to Saboteur and Shadow of Doubt
and this he made this. Hitchcock made 39 Steps in 1935 when he was still over in England, and really it was a landmark film for him. And you know, the funny thing is, I took a year and a half of Hitchcock in undergrad, and I did it for my philosophy requirement. I actually tricked my advisor into signing a piece of paper that would be my philosophy requirement.
Excellent.
And it was great. And the funny thing is, 39 Steps was the first Hitchcock that I saw.
Wow.
And it blew me away because I thought I couldn't believe that film was made in the 30s, because there were some things in it that I thought are so ahead of its time, just in people's relationships. It was smartly sexy.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, wow, a movie like this made in the 30s, and I was really turned on to Hitchcock. A lot of people might wonder why this film is put on stage. The reason, I think, is it's something that most people don't know, so they can come to the theater and be entertained in one way by a story that they're not familiar with. Though if they've seen the movie, the stage version will crack them up. It's a parody of it.
Right. And the only other example I can think of is a long, long time ago when community theaters were doing Dial M for Murder.
Yeah.
And nobody's done that in a long, long time. And it's hard to stage Topaz. And the Torn Curtain. You can't. You could do it, but it's you need a huge crew.
Now this is a good attempt at a segue for me now. I'm going to attempt a segue.
I do it every week. Don't worry about it. You're
like in North by Northwest, trying to climb Mount Rushmore. I'm going to try to make this segue. One of Hitchcock's favorite things to do in a film is to take an average man and put him in incredibly difficult circumstances.
Of course, yes.
What are some examples?
Oh, The Wrong Man with Henry Fonda. That was on TCM this past week. You mentioned North by Northwest. Both versions of The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Mm-hmm. Rear Window.
Rear Window.
Rear Window.
There you go.
So you have a person who maybe is in kind of a blah section of their life, and maybe they wish for it to be spiced up, and by getting that wish, they get a little more than they bargained for.
Yeah, but when you look like Cary Grant, I can't help you, all right? You know, I know you wind up with Eva Marie Saint and the train going through the tunnel, and you don't need to be Fellini to figure that out. But you, when you're blonde, you look like Cary Grant. Come on.
I know.
I'm sorry. Go on.
No. But the great thing is the 39 Steps was one of the first movies that Hitchcock made where you take a man who almost has such a blah going on in his life that he's actually mildly considering suicide, and all of a sudden this circumstance comes into his life where he is wrongly accused of murder. All the facts point towards this guy killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is he being pursued by the police, he's being pursued by the people that really did commit the murder.
Right.
All of society is against him. And the only thing he has to rely on are things inside him that he had no idea, strengths that he had no idea were there.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my Mount Rushmore segue. Why does this play work? We attempt on the stage at IRT to tell a movie, epic movie story on pretty much a bare stage.
Cool.
There are four actors.
It's very cool.
Now the person that wrote this script claims that we play over 150 characters. I think that's a stretch.
Okay.
I mean, if you count the dogs in the movie, in the version, or the, I don't know, you'd have to count pretty much everything, but we play a lot of people. There are airplane chases. There are train chases, car chases. The play spans, it starts in London. It goes up to Scotland. It goes everywhere. And how we do this on a bare stage is kind of the same way that Hitchcock calls upon his heroes to draw something out of them that they didn't know they had inside them.
Okay.
It's
funny because it seems like there's always a battle between stage and screen.
Yeah.
Obviously, cheaper. and what have you, and you're trying to do live theater, and there's a lot of times you have a cinema audience in there, and this seems like so when I heard you guys were doing this, it seemed like a pretty bold move, and that you were going to at least take that conflict, quote unquote, and turn it on its head. When I also heard it was just the four of you.
Yeah, you can follow the story. The story will keep you, and also we're making fun of the story. We're making fun of other mainstream Hitchcock movies. And the great thing is, like for example, on a bare stage, the script says the hero jumps out of a moving train car and is pursued by police on the side of a train, and then he climbs up and is pursued on the roof of a train. Then he leaps off of it and climbs up onto the top of a huge bridge and winds up dropping hundreds of feet into a river. That's what the script says. And the script also says you shouldn't have anything on stage besides a couple of boxes and maybe a ladder.
Okay.
So it's up to us to go, how are we going to stage that? And when the audience sees how we stage it, they think it looks cool and ridiculous at the same time. And that's anybody that wants to come and see this, I think most of the night you'll go, that's really cool and completely ridiculous.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It is phenomenal. It is an absolutely unbelievable production over there.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm glad you saw
it. Loved it. Every minute of it. Every minute.
Hit the Caliendo thing. You're so wound
up.
You could do that.
It was unbelievable.
One more again.
It was unbelievable.
That's right.
Now,
and if there's anything specific you remember that you want to cite,
well,
I'm just saying.
Without giving you away, I would say,
the train is like a fun donut to eat. There's no spoiler alert.
Well, I'll ask this. You know, how many homages to his films are there? Or, you know, is there a scoreboard that we have, a scorecard that we have to keep?
You must be psycho.
Yeah.
Look,
one.
My ring is topaz.
We around the rehearsal room, we were like, how many could we shove into this script? Because there's plenty that are not in the script that we just put in. My personal favorite is The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Uh-huh.
Because one night I had to point my gun at the audience for groaning. So I did. I quieted them by putting them at gunpoint.
At least you didn't sing Que Sera Sera.
I didn't do that. No, there's a lot. You could argue too many, but no, the audience usually...
No,
there are some people that actually kept score with their program. They like they're
you guys should start
game.
Printing those out.
Yeah, we should.
So, did you guys watch any while you were in rehearsal, or you were already schooled before that?
I did this play earlier this year in Cleveland, earlier this theater season in Cleveland. That's where I originated it, and that cast we all got together and watched the 39 Steps, the movie, which was a hoot. Because you know this, I play women in this stage version, so it was a hoot to watch.
Guys in drag,
yeah,
always funny.
Always funny.
Yeah,
yeah. A couple of Monty Python voices, which is great.
Because all women are shrill and sound like
shrill.
Terry Jones.
Yeah. I actually burned out my voice in Cleveland because the acoustics were really bad in that theater, and on the spot, I also appear as a person. Who's about 3 feet tall in this, and he used to be that used to be a 3 foot tall shrill Monty Python voiced woman, and I burned out my voice, and on the spot I was like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to hit that, and it became a 3 foot tall Indian man, and the audience actually liked that better.
Okay,
so I stuck with that.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good one. How long were you in Cleveland?
I was in Cleveland for 6 weeks doing it, and then Syracuse, New York for 6 weeks.
Oh, gosh, you did the three thing.
Yeah, and then
trio.
I took 4 months off, and now we're back doing it with two new cast members. The woman in the show is the same woman. It's me, and then two new guys, Tom Alino and Matthew Brumlow, two very good actors, had to get plugged into this in 2 weeks. We had to teach, and so we taught them most of the bits that we formulated in Cleveland, and they bless them. They were terrified. It was kind of fun to this is my third go around.
Right.
And watching these guys do it for the first time.
Beads of sweat.
Oh my God. Still tonight, I know, terrified.
Cool.
Terrified.
And the director has a Bloomington link, correct?
Peter Amster?
No, Peter Amster. I'm sorry. I was thinking.
Dale McFadden?
Yeah, I was. Sorry.
You're thinking Dale McFadden, Rat. Who just directed, the shameless plug, my wife Jen Johansson, who just closed.
This! All caps.
Theater, and she rocked the house.
Of course she did.
It's
absolutely.
Nothing to do with films. It's not. It's all to do with my awesome.
We've
life.
Had. We know that. Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know. Got it.
And Kobe, this is the only time I'm allowed to do this with Jen. I saw her first.
Wow.
That means absolutely nothing.
You were in
Cuckoo's Nest.
Cuckoo's Nest.
And she was in Love and Turtle Wax.
That's right.
That was Emma's first play.
That's right.
But guess what? Those like you, those words mean nothing.
They mean nothing. That's right.
All right, Kobe, set up your thing there.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Now, last week I gave Mr. Slagle a pile of films directed by Sidney Lumet.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And fortunately, you had already seen Network
and Serpico.
So, what'd you watch for this week?
Got through 12 Angry Men.
Good,
excellent.
Yes,
not a bad debut.
No.
Not a bad first film for a director.
No.
Not at all.
And oh my gosh,
Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Young screamy Al Pacino before he became old screamy Al Pacino.
Yeah, John Cazale. Yeah.
John Cazale. Now, my favorite nerd facts. John Cazale, every film he was in, nominated for Best Picture.
Yep. Nerd. How many did he do, like seven or something?
No, no. Godfather 1, 2. Footage of him shows up in 3.
Yeah.
The Conversation, The Deer Hunter, and Dog Day Afternoon.
Five. Yeah.
You need to watch The Deer Hunter, sir.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Joe?
We could watch The Deer Hunter together.
So, and yeah, so that's a good one as well. Enjoyed that. And you're also going to try to get through
Murder on the Orient Express and Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Oh, his last film. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Sidney Lumet, thank you for that opening scene with Marissa Tomei.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
You'll see. You'll thank me for it.
Kind of.
Now, that being said, yes, I've been hitting you with heavy dramas and films from the 50s, your favorite decade.
Oh, yeah. That was a different time.
It was a different time.
Just as the 70s were.
Yeah, so... you asked for comedies. You ate your cinematic vegetables.
Yep.
I give you comedies now. You have.
It's about damn time.
Airplane.
All right.
Yeah. His Girl Friday and A Night at the Opera.
Is.
Oh, you'll see. If you think films from before you were born were slow, wait till you check out His Girl Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, A Night at the Opera does not star Will Ferrell and Chris Kattan.
Okay.
Not at all. Oh, jeez.
Or Ben Stiller.
That's awful.
That's
why would you bring that movie up on this show?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's terrible. Old. Now, it is old. Now, Rob, I know you and I were talking, and your lovely wife told me you purchased the book.
I did. I haven't read
You've been busy.
I've been busy.
You've had things to do.
But Slapshot.
There is. Yeah, I wore my.
Oh, yes. Love
Slapshot.
Yeah,
he has seen. So I give him that. Give him credit for that.
I need to tell you guys that my big segue, my big link to Slapshot is before I was a professional actor, I was a hockey player.
Oh,
yes. I was a goaltender, and I actually had three. I played in what we call the Iron League.
Oh, yeah. That's where the Hansons are from.
That's right.
Iron League.
And I have two false teeth to show for it. And my first playoff game that I was ever in, that my mom, also the first game my mom ever attended, first shot on goal, blew out a tooth. And the thing that aided me the most in getting my butt off the ice was I thought my mom was going to climb over the glass.
Like Jeff George's mom?
Yeah. And I was like, not on my watch.
No, that's not good.
Yeah. So anyway.
Well, there is a book. It's called The Making a Slapshot, and it's written by Jonathan Jackson. It is available through Wiley, John, and Sons Publishing. And I'm hoping to get Mr. Jackson on the show sometime fairly soon. I know it would be. I wish the ice were still in the playoffs, and my Red Wings are still in the playoffs. So, Red Wings. So things are good about it. See, Kobe, it's not just me.
Famous scene in Slapshot, one of many,
which we can say on the air.
Yeah, we can talk around things like my talking about the 3-foot person I play. I don't know. Charlestown Chiefs going into the rival town that has picketed them.
Yes, in the bus scene.
In the bus scene where they are presenting their alternate faces to the crowd.
Alternate faces. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's good.
We did that. My team did that.
You did that.
We did. And
you were the legs, weren't you?
I was not the legs. I was a very young goaltender, and I had not progressed to legs out the window yet. But I was presenting my best alternate face to the crowd in Carteret, New Jersey.
Oh, well, they deserve that. I've actually been to Carteret,
Those
New Jersey.
Those were our heated rivals, the Carteret, New Jersey.
It's no nobody can be Trenton. I'm just saying. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Now, did you show Jen's seen it, right?
Jen loves Slapshot.
See, the
Once again, I'm
an amazing
score.
Spouse. An amazing spouse.
I shoot, I score. I mean, I got a wife that loves hockey and loves Slapshot.
I knew she loved hockey. I just don't know. Kobe, you got to get your date to watch Slapshot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm
Have
married.
You guys seen Martin Short movies? Or you know Martin Short?
Yes, I'm aware of the
Yes,
name
he's
of the man.
He's the he is the voice of the Cat in the Hat weekdays on PBS Kids.
There it is. Jen and I both grew up doing Martin Short bits for our parents in their doorway when they wanted to go to sleep. So, I mean...
Soulmates.
You know, soulmates.
There you
Come
go.
On.
Speaking of which, here's some words to live by.
Oh, dang it, you got into it. Faster.
You just told me!
Hang on a second.
Completely
breaking down.
Oh, my God.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Okay, IRT, 39 Steps. It's running through May
15th.
May 15th, IRTLive.com. Rob, thanks for hanging with us. You know the door's always open, not even in hockey season. Joe, plug the Film Yap.
TheFilmYap.com.
Good luck at Thor next Tuesday. And well, I just want to get it all. And next week, Footlight Musicals, The King and I, three generations of Socies Perkins on stage and backstage. That's my company. Yep. You're listening. Thanks, Kobe. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.